Welcome to some amazing discussions from the voices of young America. Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. In the next hour, you'll hear from leading women in academics, business, entertainment, and more. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome, everybody, to the show. This is Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Maddie Rose Holler.
And I am Michelle Jaffe.
And so we have two lovely women here today from the Clinton Global Initiative, and this is so exciting for us because they have done so much for helping women's development as well as, you know, being so special in their own fields of work. So to start off with, we have Mara Pally. So I wanted to go ahead and ask you, how are you doing today? And thank you for your time for being here.
I am so happy to be here. It's been so exciting to be at Arizona State University for the Clinton Global Initiative University and being around such exciting and inspiring young women and men as well who are really interested in making positive change in the world. It's been great.
I think that's awesome. And to start off as well, why don't you tell me a little bit about the Clinton Global Initiative as well as your part in that?
So I run Secretary Clinton's office at the Clinton Foundation, and that includes three areas of focus that she personally is very invested in. And the first, no surprise, is women and girls internationally. And we launched a program called No Ceilings, which focuses on essentially the progress that women have made in the last 20 years since 1995 when Secretary Clinton went to Beijing at the UN World Conference on Women and declared women's rights are human rights. And we're coming up on that anniversary in 2015 in September. And we are using that as a marker to look back over the past 20 years and assess what accomplishments have been made. There's been great progress made in the area of women and girls in the last 20 years. And we're going to do a database assessment, getting out the facts about specific progress, but also using that to decide, well, what is the roadmap forward? Because while we've made great progress, great gaps remain. And we want to be able to use data and hard facts to point us in the direction of where we need to focus for the next 5, 10, 20 years. And in addition to No Ceiling, Secretary Clinton also has two other initiatives. One is around early childhood development, focusing on the 0 to 5 age and how critical of a time that is in a child's life, both in developing health and in early learning. And the third program is around youth employment in the United States because there is an incredibly large unemployment rate from the 16 to 24-year-old year-old cohort, many of your peers. Mm-hmm. Their unemployment rate is twice that the national average. So what can she, Hillary Clinton, and the Clinton Foundation do to address this really troubling problem? So I oversee those three areas, but I think we'll focus on No Ceilings as we continue this conversation.
Fantastic.
I think that's great. You're definitely a busy woman,
yes.
I have to say. I mean, there's no surprise in that. So that is wonderful. And to go a little bit into your experience, what is it like to be working alongside the Clintons? Because that must be a very impeccable job.
It is. It's truly incredible. I mean, it is a great honor every day to be able to work for now an entire family who really devotes their lives to making positive change in the world and finding out how they, as individuals and collectively as a family, can scale what works and inspire others to make change. So from my personal experience, I have been working with Secretary Clinton since she was First Lady, on and off. So as First Lady and Senator and Secretary and now at the Clinton Foundation, and there is just no greater inspiration than getting up every day and working for a woman who is so inspiring, as well as working on issues that really matter in the world. So I feel very privileged every day. But I also have to say, all of us work incredibly hard. Because as you can imagine, people like the President and Secretary Clinton and Chelsea Clinton don't get done what they get done by lazing around by the pool.
Absolutely. So in other words, too, what would you say your viewpoint is on women's issues today? Because like you said, you know, it's something that's hard-hitting. We're definitely taking time to go ahead and be proactive about that now. And it definitely is a worthy cause.
Absolutely. I think now is a really critical time in the women and girls space as we're pivoting from an issue that people were to care about because it's a moral issue, mm-hmm. and a right issue and sort of, if you will, a softer issue to what is in addition to being the moral and right thing, it's also an economic imperative, mm-hmm. and it's the smart thing to do. It is the smart thing to do from a business, from a political, from an any perspective, to have women decision makers at the table. And looking at the data, if women were fully engaged in economies around the world, GDPs mm-hmm. of countries would be exponentially better and stronger. So not only is it the right thing to do to have women fully participate in society, but it's also the smart thing to do economically, politically, in terms of making decisions. And as any of us in this room and probably many of the listeners will know, when you have a woman's perspective at the table, decisions are made. We have this incredible program at the Clinton Foundation, which focuses on smallholder farmers in Malawi. And those farmers all basically self-elect a leader in their local area, for someone to lead their farms and lead negotiations with suppliers. And in 40% of those, the leaders are selected as women, and what they found with the women leaders is their credibility in repaying loans back to banks is so much higher that once, while initially the banks look at things in Malawi and other countries think, oh, we're a woman, that's sort of suspect, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. They found that they can bring them data showing them that actually when the women are the leaders and the women are the ones who take the loans out, they repay them at much better rates. So I think there are examples like that from around the world that showing women's participation just makes for smart sense as well as the right thing to do.
And I think those statistics are so great because, like you said, that's the proof of the pudding really in there. And not only that, but sometimes there is that stereotypical viewpoint where, you know, men are dominant over women in the business area and in all aspects. But really, like you were saying, you know, women do play a crucial role.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we can look at some numbers which are incredibly discouraging, like the number of women CEOs or the mm-hmm. number of women in Congress. And then in other numbers that are really at parity are really encouraging. And that's part of what No Ceilings wants to do, is to say we've made incredible progress, for example, in the area of women's primary education. So in 1995, it was a major priority to get girls into primary schools. And now, 20 years later, that's really not a focus that we need to have anymore because we've made such great strides. So we know that when we focus on something, mm-hmm. we really can make change. But now let's look at where we need to continue to focus in order to make better change in areas like economic participation, political participation. Women still have long ways to go. But we know from experience in education and other fields that change is really possible.
Agreed. And knowing the fact that youth plays a big role in all of this as well, because as many people say, they are our new generation. One day, or literally they are our future. They're going to be taking over our jobs and they're going to be running this country. There's no doubt about that. So in your opinion, how can our youth play a role in contributing to women's development?
It's interesting. You know, one of the things that is so critical to keep this issue moving is inspiring this generation, millennial generations, to feel like this really is an issue that they should focus on, and that does matter, and it is important. And one of the areas that really resonates with younger people is economic disparities. So, for example, the wage gap between men and women. Mm-hmm. So girls look at their male counterparts and say, that makes no sense at all that he would be making more than me in the same job. And being able to focus certain disparities in ways that relate, that are relatable, and that women and girls can get excited about and feel like this actually impacts my life. So I think one of the challenges with girls and with the younger generation is feeling like this really is an issue that there still is a lot of work to be done, and the pay gap, and I think looking again at women in business and women in political office really demonstrates that we aren't necessarily equal, even though sometimes it can feel that way, particularly for younger people.
Agreed. And what would you consider your biggest success throughout your years of work?
Honestly, that I'm still working for Hillary Clinton and loving it every day, and I feel so inspired by her. And somebody once told me this, which really resonated, which is that I know that I want to make change in this world. Mm-hmm. I know that that's incredibly important to me personally. And what is the best way that I can do that, I think, is by working for somebody who I feel like can have a disproportionately great impact upon the world. So I think, you know, my greatest accomplishment now is that I've worked incredibly hard, and I'm able to work on issues that I care about with a woman who is so inspiring. And one thing that I just said is that I worked really hard. And I say that now because of Sheryl Sandberg's book, mm-hmm. which there are, you know, many opinions about that. But one thing she wrote in that book which really resonated with me is if before I read that, I would have said, I'm really lucky. Mm-hmm. I'm really lucky mm-hmm. to be where I am. And the truth is, I've worked really hard and I've done a good job. And of course, I'm lucky, as we all are. But you would never hear a man say, I'm in this great job because I'm just so lucky. Like, I just woke up here one day and I happen to be lucky. And I think that's an important thing for girls and women to learn. Like, we, both Penny and I, are here in our positions, and you'll talk to Penny in a minute, because we've worked really hard, and, mm-hmm. you know, we're smart and we're good at our jobs, and in addition to being lucky, as I think we all are. So I feel very, very blessed to be able to work on these issues and to learn every day from both Secretary Clinton and the amazing women who are in the women's empowerment space.
It's wonderful, and I commend you for all of your work, because it's true, and I'm so glad that you brought that up, because it's in the sense that change isn't always easy to come across, and even when you're the person who's initiating that change, yeah. but if you associate yourself with the right people, you put in the amount of effort, that hard work and determination, it can be done. Mm-hmm. It can be.
It can.
So I'm so glad you mentioned that. And finally, one of my last questions is, what is the biggest challenge that you face? Because although we do have our high points, there are also sometimes when we do have those points were of struggle.
Absolutely. I mean, I think particularly in this area, there is so much that needs to get done, and there are so many different areas. Where do you focus, and how do you, particularly in our No Ceilings program, do we approach this in a very broad mm-hmm. Women and girls, what does that mean internationally? Do we focus just on one or two areas, for example, economic opportunity or political participation? It's really narrowing and figuring out how to calculate where you can have the most impact and how.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mara, for joining me. It's been lovely getting to know you.
It's been great to be totally inspired by a 16-year-old who's been on the air for 4 years.
Oh, well, thank you so much. So with that being said, we're going to be heading over to take a break. This is Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm Maddie Rose Haller.
I'm Michelle Jaffe.
And we'll see you right after this break.
Join Kid Chef Eliana for Cool Kids Cook. Eliana is one of the youngest published cookbook authors and will show you that there are all kinds of goodness in food, beyond the chicken nuggets and fries. On our show, we'll discover cuisine from around the world, learn some great cooking techniques, speak with some of the world's top chefs, and share recipes. Kid Chef Eliana is here for you on Cool Kids Cook every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Bon appetit!
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
Join us every week for the Paper Hope Street Team. None of our topics are off the table. This is a program that you can listen to and discuss with your family. From the pages of the Paper Hope blog to the internet radio airwaves, we'll talk about the topics you want to talk about, such as friendship and relationships, or some more controversial issues about sex, drugs, and underage drinking. Join the Paper Hope Street Team live every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Kids channel. Let's talk soon. You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at #WomenInvest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
And welcome back from break. You are watching Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm Michelle Jaffe.
And I'm Maddie Rose Haller.
And we just finished our interview with Mara. Now we are going to move on to the lovely Penny Abiwardina. Did I say that correct?
You said that perfectly.
Absolutely fantastic. And do you mind telling us more about yourself and your position?
Sure. So I am with the Clinton Global Initiative, and I lead the girls and women's efforts at CGI. And we are so happy to be here in Arizona for CGI University at ASU. So CGI started in 2005, and we are part of the Clinton Foundation. We're an initiative of. We love the word initiative. We are a membership organization, and what makes us, and we do yearly convenings. Our biggest meeting is in September during the UN General Assembly, when it is impossible to move around Midtown Manhattan. But what makes us different from other conference and other membership models is that we require all of our members to make commitments to action. And this really stems from President Clinton having gone to thousands of conferences, smartest people in the room talking about, you know, how to address global challenges, but really wanting them to hold them accountable through our commitments to action model. So people come to CGI not to talk about just what they care about, but what they're doing to address that. I joined about 5 years ago when we started to explore how we could increase the profile of half the population and how our members are addressing that in their portfolio. We have been building that out by having dedicated programming. We, you know, want to talk about what is important in girls' education and girls' health, women's health, and in a number of different issues. But it really is about, if our members are working on energy efficiency or in disaster response, it is important to think about half the population. And so that is something that we're committed to doing in terms of how we integrate gender into the programming that we offer our members, and then how we advise our members to develop their commitments. And so we have seen a significant rise, which is really exciting. We've had this focus for about 5 years. Last year, our members made 180 commitments around the world.
Wow.
And more than 60% had a substantive approach to empowering girls and women in their commitment. And that is a really exciting rise in how our members are thinking about, enabling half the population.
Absolutely. And I've actually had the opportunity to experience that firsthand. For 2 days now, I've been to the Clinton Global Initiative at ASU.
Yes.
And I'm just absolutely wowed. And exactly what you said about how it's so unique is that each speaker comes with mm-hmm. a different skill set and different advantages to themselves that really provide a great asset to the Clinton Global Initiative. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And I think, one of our priorities is to bring all of you, especially at CGI University, but at all of our CGI meetings, so that you can share what's working, identify opportunities for partnership, and to figure out how to collaborate. One of our priorities is to ensure that our members are collaborating, catalyzing action together, but thinking through solutions from a cross-sectoral perspective. So how do NGOs work with the private sector? How do we work with governments? How do we work with individuals and communities? And so those partnerships, and we just came out of the Girls and Women's Strategy Luncheon.
Yes.
And, we concluded the session with, the majority of the time the students were talking to each other about their commitments, what they were doing, and how they can integrate girls and women even more substantively in what they're doing. A lot of the report back was, wow, we're all working on the same things. Here are different ways that we could actually partner, keep in touch. And so that's really exciting. And I would say, in addition to partnerships, one of the things that I think is really important about CGI and the work that we're doing around girls and women is our emphasis on how we engage boys and men as allies. And half, I think, Chelsea pointed out during the Girls and Women Strategy session that, we had at least 30 to 40% of that luncheon were men. And that's really important. And they're working on really exciting issues from girls' education to stopping human trafficking. And so I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, and I was absolutely inspired too. And it's great to note that it really is just this great combination of different generations, different
yeah.
genders, different
absolutely.
Ages, different backgrounds, people from all over the world. And we all have the same ideas. There was a speaker, Manal Al-Sharif, I believe
yes.
was her name,
mm-hmm.
and she described in last night's panel that mm-hmm. the same issues can be found among women all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So how has CGI embraced this idea in finding solutions for issues globally and not treating each issue independently?
That's a great question, and that's something that we're trying not, we definitely don't want our members working on silos, and so that's been really important. All of our programming is very much trying to find the overlap or the interaction between technology and health, market-based approaches and education. And so it is really important that our members are not only working in the, I'm the education person, I'm only talking to the education people. We curate programming so that you're talking to members that are doing work. I mean, that's one of the things when you have that 10,000-foot perspective. Pro Mujer, Rosario Perez was on the plenary this morning, and she runs a very well-known, successful microfinance institution. But one of their most, they're one of their most successful sort of products and vehicles is reproductive health and other health issues for women. But they use microfinance as a essentially a tool to get women to the table to support them. But once they're there, this, they're educating with them with health. And so, you know, she's not just a the economic empowerment person. She's not just the health person. She's both. And so that's actually very important for us. And it's we're very conscious of that when we're curating our programming to ensure that our members are working beyond their issue area.
Absolutely. And those are very heavy topics as well, looking at women's health and overall health and global education and things like that. And it's important to note that nobody can be successful if they're just a one-man show, right? It really takes a whole army to really create a movement.
Exactly, and it's that partnership model. And you know, one of our favorite things to talk about is that it's also not just about starting something new. It's about replicating ideas that have already worked. It's about scaling. You know, this is about being effective, not being the first person to do it. And so that's where the collaboration, but also the learning. I mean, one of my favorite ways of thinking about CGI, and when I part of the reason I was so excited to get the job five years ago, is that it literally is a marketplace of ideas. And it's, you know, not just ideas. They're being implemented on the ground. And it's such a great, I'm doing this, but they're doing this. That ability to connect and partner is so much more advanced in our marketplace. And it's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. And I love the ideas that you bring up. And when you gave your speech, it was fantastic as well. So personally to you, what does education mean to you? And how important do you think it is to have a world-class education?
I mean, I don't know what world, I think in the U.S. we would think of world class as possibly an Ivy League. I think education is key. They actually talked a lot about it in the education plenary we just had right now. And it's, you know, it's about opportunity, and it's about the opportunity to be confident, to be able to learn the skills that you need. And education looks different. It looks different around the world. It looks different by individual and your interests, but it's about the opportunity to be educated, and that's what our members work on, is creating that opportunity.
Fantastic. And what has been your most encouraging achievement thus far?
That's a great question. Personally or professionally?
Either one. Whatever comes to mind.
Professionally, I think I've been really blessed. I mean, just as blessed, but I worked very hard, exactly as Laura said, to have the opportunity to work for the Clinton family and also my colleagues. I work with some of the greatest people in the world, some of the smartest, most hardworking, and I think being able to work with them to drive this agenda around girls and women and this this approach that goes beyond silo, beyond, you know, girls and women as sort of this marginalized population and it being core to everything that we're doing, that has been, I'd say, the most exciting thing that I've done.
Absolutely. And I feel like the Clinton Global Initiative, I feel like there's just this momentum that you feel in the air, that people just feed off of each other and each other's ideas.
Absolutely.
Just at our table, Anu and I, we got to sit down and we got to help this girl come up with like a whole new business plan. And it was fantastic to see that grow just in a short amount of time.
She was one of the people that came and actually spoke to me after. And that's exactly, she's a perfect example. So she had created her commitment was, I forgot something about the belly, but it's about food health. And she had not considered what, you know, she's, you know, this could be boys and girls. It's absolutely, you know, it's for everyone. And in talking to your table, she realized, you know, she could really actually target the young women that she wants to have engaged with her commitment around body image.
Absolutely.
And she's like, had not thought about the impact of what that conversation can be. And that's exactly what we are trying to, you know, not everything needs to be, oh, I am the gender expert doing everything for girls and women. It is just about asking the right questions. And one of my favorite stories and commitment stories comes out of CGI America a few years ago, where they this gentleman was creating a commitment to create jobs in a rural community in the U.S. And I asked him, hey, you know, how many women work for you? And he said, without blinking an eye, at least half. And I was pretty surprised because in rural areas, women are largely unemployed or underemployed. So he said, well, let me go back and let me check. So I went back, checked his numbers, and he's like, wow, you know what? Like less than 18% of my workforce is women, and was really surprised. He just needed to be asked that question. Mm-hmm. He edited his commitment so that he was going to actually, I think it was 4,000 jobs, 40% would be for women. He would actively recruit them. Then he would create the ecosystem around childcare, healthcare, housing to make sure that they stayed in those jobs. And, you know, it was just asking the right questions. And so this commitment, and so I think what you all did at your table with this young woman was really exciting, and I think that's the power of being at CGI and CGI University specifically in this case.
Absolutely, and I'm sure that success was just music to your ears. And finally, what steps can the average woman, the average girl, and really men as well, what can they do to get involved? Because I know,
absolutely.
I mean, these great positions, but what can they do?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's about getting involved not only in your community, but in your family. You know, domestic violence is extraordinarily high. It's about being aware of what's happening in your house, what's about what's happening in your neighborhood, what's in your community. And I think everybody has a different way of wanting to engage, but it's about, I think, both being aware, speaking up, and getting involved.
Absolutely. And this has been another fantastic interview. And unfortunately, we're going to have to go to break. So thank you so much,
thank
Penny.
You.
I really appreciate it. And this is The Break.
Thank you.
Ready to explore the amazing world under the sea? Your host is a certified scuba diver, explorer. He likes to cook, and most of all, he's just a kid like you. You'll find out a lot more lies under the sea than what you've seen on TV, in movies, and even in aquatic parks. You'll learn about all kinds of fish, as well as other sea creatures. We'll take you to some exotic destinations and so much more. There's a whole big world under sea just waiting to be discovered. Tune in to Under the Sea, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Voice America Kids.
Sometimes we may sound strange, but remember, we're just kids with opinions. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at #WomenInvest. Or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everybody, to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm Maddie Rose Holler.
I'm Michelle Jaffe.
And we have another lovely set of interviews. We just got done talking to Mara and Penny, and it was fantastic just getting to see what they're bringing to the Clinton Global Initiative, as well as women's development and all of that great stuff. So now we have two more lovely interviews, and Michelle's actually going to introduce them for us.
Absolutely. So right here we have Duke students Melina Smith and Bianca Brocht, and they are part of a very relevant program with engineering and girls. So why don't we get started? What is your engineering background?
Okay, so I am a biomedical engineer, so is Melina, and we are juniors at Duke University. I personally, my dad is an engineer, and growing up, I never really understood what he did, but in high school, I learned about math and science, and I learned that I was really good at math and science. And my dad kind of pressured me to pick a major, pick something to go into, and I kind of just picked engineering, and it turned out to be the right fit for me.
Very cool. As Bianca said, I'm also a junior in the biomedical engineering program at Duke, and I initially got interested in it because I wanted to be a doctor, work in the medical field. very common thing for a kid to want to do. And then in high school, I realized how much I loved physics. I really love physics. And I couldn't imagine sort of leaving it behind. And I wanted to find a way to marry physics to the medical field. And that's exactly what biomedical engineering is. And I think it's really cool to apply, like, the logical principles of math and physics to solve very human problems.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. And one thing that you mentioned, Bianca, was that you kind of found it through high school in the sense that you found out you were good in math and science. And, you know, that's typical for a kid to go through. And I think that's wonderful that you brought that up. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, what would you encourage girls to take part in high school in order to readily prepare them for a STEM career?
So there are a lot of, I think girls should really look into whatever they like to do. Engineering fit for me, and I didn't really realize this until college, right? I picked a major and kind of just went with it. But I was in math team in high school, very involved in taking the science physics classes, and the thing they have to do is really look for opportunities to talk to people about what they like.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I'm from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, which is surrounded by three huge research universities. So I would encourage any high schooler who lives close to a college campus to look into the opportunities there, because there are so many to get kids, especially girls, involved in science. And I think that sort of gets your foot in the door.
Absolutely. And while we're on that note, can you explain the difference between science and engineering? Because you said that you loved physics and you loved math and science. So what exactly is engineering that really sets it apart from overall just science?
The way I think of engineering is that it's kind of like a problem-solving mindset. And it's now applicable to all types of, all different kinds of fields. Going into business, having an engineering background, for example, is what I plan to do. And having that background has you approach problems differently. You approach problem, you define the problem, and you figure out what you can do to remedy the problem and the best way you can do that.
Yeah, I agree. What drew me to engineering over science is the ability to not only study the way things are, but also take the way things are and say, this is the conclusion I want, this is something that I would want to change things to, and how can I manipulate the current circumstances to get that result? And I think in a similar way, we'd like to take the current culture, the current atmosphere, regarding, like, girls in engineering, and sort of manipulate the stereotypes, get rid of them.
Yeah. One thing I also love about engineering is that science, you always think of science as being cutting edge, going into the realm of the unknown. And I think of engineering as sometimes there's parts of engineering that require you to reevaluate the way we do things. So there are a lot of ways we could do things better and more simply, make things more efficient, and I think that's something that engineering really has allowed me to do.
Taking that into consideration as well, and it's a lovely point to make up, how do you feel that engineering is making a positive effect on the world today?
I'll take this one. Yeah. So the National Academy of Engineering had a summit in which they identified the 14 grand challenges that face our future, and engineering can be used to solve all of them.
Wow.
And, or I guess I'm trying to think of what they included. There were, like, engineer better medicines, secure cyberspace, reverse engineer the brain. And I think it's really cool that engineering can be used to.
Yeah, like with the girls that we work with, we kind of do an exercise in the beginning, talking to them about what they think engineers do. So a lot of them say, like, build bridges and
but computers.
Yeah,
and then we say, what about skin? What about makeup? Because that really sort of...
Yeah, I mean, engineers are involved in all facets of life nowadays. Like, all the products that we use are all engineered to be a specific way.
And I think that's a very important idea. And why don't we backtrack a little bit? So you obviously started a very important project bringing women into the engineering world, and we're going to kind of bring that into it, the stereotypes of women in engineering, things like that. So why don't you go into detail more about your project, your engineering project, and what makes it unique?
Okay, yeah. So our project is called Girls Engineering Change. It's a nonprofit organization started by a very good friend of ours. Her name's Christine Schindler. And she kind of had a vision. In high school, I know she, when she decided on engineering, a lot of people, like, were wondering why. Mm-hmm. She picked a major. I mean, she was a popular girl, like, interested in singing, so...
Other girls were like, why would you do that? Yeah. Like, why would you put yourself into that?
And so she kind of started this nonprofit to introduce girls, usually middle school girls from 4th to 8th grade, to the STEM fields, especially engineering, in order to kind of make them aware of it as a career opportunity, as an opportunity to make change. The way we do this is we organize different workshops, and we work on projects, engineering projects that last maybe 2 hours, that are all then after they are done, they're donated somewhere to where they make an impact. And then I think that part of the organization makes it really unique. So for example, lately we've been working on a solar-powered USB charger, and so we call college mentors, partner up with students, maybe 2 students per mentor, and they work on this project for 2 hours, talk about engineering, and then they have a finished product at the end, which will then be donated to the Red Cross, where it can help people in need in disaster areas for disaster relief. Yeah.
And I think that's what's really unique about our project is the fact that we approach engineering as a way to help other people to better the future. And I think that's an idea that really resonates with girls, because girls are inherently compassionate. And I think it really resonates with our whole generation. The millennial generation is very into self-actualization and,
absolutely,
you know, changing the world. Mm-hmm. And girls don't really see engineering, you know, these dry math and science subjects in middle school, as the tools to do that. And so by presenting it in that light, they all of a sudden think that engineering is for them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to look at it, and a great project to take on as well, because what you're trying to say is, you know, that is the foundation of all of it. Right. And it is hard to see that when you're a middle schooler or a high schooler. And
even in college sometimes.
I'm sure. So that is definitely a fair statement to say. So just letting them know that those are the building blocks to, you know, a profession later on that they can be able to take on in engineering. And it seems like one of the biggest benefits that they get out of it is a better understanding, if that's
right.
Fair to say.
Yeah. I think our goal isn't necessarily to make all girls engineers, because that wouldn't be wouldn't be good for our future either. But I think it's just sort of to open their minds to that option, and also to sort of communicate to all girls in general what engineering is, and to sort of reduce the stigma, because a lot of what I've seen is that a lot of the prejudice I've gotten isn't from other boys in engineering. It's actually from girls who are not in engineering. My friends who are in the social sciences sort of are like, why are you doing that? Or, like, that's different. Or, like, there's just, like, this wall up as soon as you talk about that. And so just sort of teaching all girls that it's just another discipline.
Yeah, you ask a middle school girl, and I've done this, what she wants to be when she grows up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to hear doctor, you're going to hear lawyer, you're going to hear all types of things, but you're not going to hear engineer.
Right.
Until they are aware of it. And so it's really interesting, because after the sessions that we do, sometimes I ask again, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And some girls are like, you know, I'm really considering engineering. Like, this isn't... I didn't know this was an opportunity that was available to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's just an issue with the communication of what engineering really is. I think there is just a stigma that people don't really understand what engineering truly is, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what you can do with it.
Yeah, because I think it's not a subject that's taught in grade school.
Exactly.
So I've had a lot of younger girls ask me, you know, what exactly is engineering? And I think it's really cool to have the opportunity when someone's 9 years old to just define it for them so they never have this sort of misconception.
And now you guys are here, and I'm sure all our audience will hear this and really reconsider their future plans as well, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It definitely does shed light on the subject matter as well, because like you were saying, sometimes it's that little piece that, like, am I able to be an engineer?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you're a girl or you're a guy or whatever the case may be. Just because you're a girl doesn't mean that you can't take on engineering. And sometimes there is that gender gap.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what is your opinion on that gender gap? Do you feel like there should be more that we can do about it, or what should be done?
I think that there's a lot of stats that say that girls perform poorly in math and science, and, you know, they sort of drop out by the time they get to high school. And so some people look at that and they're like, oh, girls are inherently bad at math and science.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought is, no, that's not what it is. It's just that they're told that that's not for them and that's not what they should do. And so they stop trying. And so I think that's why we see them drop out. And another point is that, you know, we're sort of ignoring half of the talent pool by not opening girls' minds to engineering.
So much untapped potential.
And it's just kind of crazy. I think there's a quote from Chelsea Clinton, no nation that wants to keep up with the future can leave an entire gender behind. And
and I think the way that we approach it is that we need to mentor students at an early age.
Absolutely. I think we're going to get into a lot more stereotypes and that disparity between men and women in the field as well.
So let's take a break for now. You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm Maddie Rose Holler.
And I'm Michelle Jaffe.
And we'll see you right after this break.
What about the world concerns you? Is it future success? Is it world issues? Are you just looking to change the world in general? Tune in to What Up World. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, or what you look like. Everyone is entitled to the same chance for success. Follow your dreams. Move forward. Make a difference. Tune in to What Up World every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel.
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at #WomenInvest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Maddie Rose.
And I'm Michelle Jaffe.
And Michelle's actually going to continue this conversation with Melina and Bianca.
Yes, so we just, right before the break, we talked about the stereotypes between men and women in engineering and science fields, and how there really is a stigma attached to women in the science field, and how it's not correct. And so I just want to touch on that again. What do you believe are the caustic effects of stereotyping in this field?
I mean, the effects, we see them all the time. We see the gender gap in the engineering field. We see the fact that more engineers are needed in the career field every day.
Right. I think going back to the point about ignoring half of the talent pool, when we have less people doing engineering, we have less people available to solve problems. We have less problems being solved.
And engineering curriculums are kind of known to be extremely difficult and extremely hard to stick with.
Right.
So a smaller pool is just going to lead to less and less interest.
So right. As far as education goes and in the school systems, you said before how there is no engineering class. So do you feel like that is the missing piece in the puzzle to really get this movement going towards more women engineers, or do you think there's something else maybe missing?
Well, I think it's hard because you sort of do need a foundation of math and science in order to begin engineering classes. We even saw that in college, but
We're juniors now, and we're just getting really
into the interesting stuff.
Right, right.
But one of my cousins, she's 5 years old, she does a program at her school in which it's like an after-school robotics program, and it's Lego robotics. And it's sort of like they take they created like a simplified computer program, and these kindergartners get to program like a soccer player to move back and forth or a bird to fly. And it was so cool to hear this 5 year old girl be like, yeah, I programmed this soccer player and I programmed this bird to fly and I did all this stuff. And she just thought it was totally normal and didn't think it was weird that she was doing this. And it actually sounded so fun. But then her dad told me that she was the only girl in this class.
But that's important to note that it is in them, that they do have this passion. I feel just as they're raised, they get taught these stereotypes, that they're not in them from the beginning. They're taught these things.
Right. I mean, look at toys. I mean, boys are given building blocks, and girls are given Barbie dolls. I mean, I have nothing against Barbie dolls, but like the toys that children are given to play with lead them
to socialize them into what they should do with their life. Another really cool thing is a graduate from Stanford created a game called Goldie Blocks. And I don't know if you guys have heard about this.
It was on the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And her approach was, well, boys like building and girls like reading. So why don't I incorporate reading and building to get girls interested in building? And she cited how it's really important for girls to develop, like, spatial
awareness.
Yeah, and I think that I never really realized that. I used to play with Lincoln Logs and Legos when I was little, and I would also play with my stuffed animals, but I never thought that that was instrumental in being good at math and science. So.
Absolutely. And I have a twin brother, actually, and he's in robotics, and he's really interested in being an engineer. So I was raised right along with him playing Legos. And, I mean, I never thought that there was anything weird about that. I mean, it doesn't have a specific gender attached to it.
Natural.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just one of those things that I guess it is taught, unfortunately. And hopefully through these efforts, we're going to change that and create a movement. I hope your project, and I know it absolutely will. So what is your future goal for your project?
I think to expand to other college campuses. We're developing a pretty sustainable model at Duke, and we would like to do the same at other schools.
I mean, the goal is to pair up college students and middle school students at a very close level, so like a one-to-one or one-to-two relationship. So you really need that base of college student volunteers to do that. So hopefully opening up chapters of Girls Engineering Change in different colleges will accomplish that.
Right, and our last question for the engineering idea is, how have you also incorporated men and boys into this as well, not just women and girls?
Well, I mean, half our exec team is boys, and we take guy volunteers just as much as we take girls, and we find that they are just as enthusiastic to help.
And we find that the little girls who participate in our programs think it's kind of fun to work with a guy who's like funny and will joke around with them. And I think it gives them a more realistic idea of what it would be like, because it's not like engineering is full of girls. So,
I mean, it's also important that we make no distinction. We assign girls to their mentors, but they are just mentors. It doesn't matter whether they're a girl or a guy. Having guys there is important also because girls see that they're treated well. A large stereotype, fear of women going into the field is that in the career place, in college, that they are not going to receive good treatment from the guys that they are surrounded by. In a lot of these cases, classes are filled with 70-80% male students.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, thank you so much, guys, for, you know, joining us today and getting a chance to talk to us about, you know, how great engineering is and how well women fit into that, too. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we're going to be introducing Anu Bardwaj, and she's actually the founder and creator of Women Investing in Women. And she also has some details to talk about, you know, that stereotype between boys and girls. And I think that's so relevant for what we just talked about. So we're so enjoying having you here, Anu.
Thank you so much, Maddie. I'm really thrilled with our participation this weekend with Clinton Global Initiative. And we're so delighted that Penny and Mara were able to join us today and share a little bit about the work that they're doing. Women Investing in Women and Girls, we launched our Facebook page on Christmas. And I was shocked to find out that 2 months later, we had about 160,000 followers. Our stats are showing us that we're in over 100 countries now. And we ran some analytics to see, you know, what were the demographics. And what's very interesting is that we have 60% who are actually women followers, and the 39% are actually male, which is fantastic. But more importantly, we saw that within these statistics, the highest percentages were actually between the ages of 13 to 34. And so I have a lot of hope for the millennials, and that's what this conference is actually focusing on, that there is going to be a more balanced participation on these issues that we're talking about, getting more women in STEM. We met some people talking about female genital mutilation. We talked about getting more women entrepreneurs funded today. We talked about how do we get more women investing involved? Lots of different topics that touched upon the various themes of this conference. So I'm really pleased with the way that we're headed. And also with the launch of our show. This is going to be our very first show airing next Friday on Voice America Kids. So we're really looking forward to hearing from all of our listeners around the world about content that excites them. And also more ways to get more men and boys involved. And I think that's been one of the very big themes of this conference, is how do we have more of a balanced dialogue so that we all benefit, like our entire community, our world. How do we do this in a better way? So I'm really delighted with what we've covered, Maddie and Michelle, today, and there's just so much more to look forward to.
I agree, and I think that's the wonderful part about women investing in women, too, is we're not just saying that it's all about women and girls. We want to tie the men and the boys in there to show that, you know, we really are helping women's development, and a big part of that is going to need their support as well.
Absolutely.
And I think the issues that we are covering, not only in this show, but in all of the shows next time, we're covering these issues that don't... Our Earth isn't just made up of women and girls. Our Earth isn't just made up of boys and men. We're all living in the same world together. So it wouldn't be conducive to provide a solution for only women and girls if it involves everybody, I believe.
Absolutely.
And Anu, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about Women Investing in Women in itself, just for anybody that's maybe not as familiar with it.
Absolutely. So we're actually in the process, or I shouldn't say in the process, we are creating a revolution. And this revolution focuses on the economic empowerment of women worldwide. And we're not doing it alone. We've come in pretty bold, pretty strong. And what we've created is a global summit series. And we've already launched now in New York City, Stockholm, Sweden. We were just in South Africa and Johannesburg about a month ago. And we are heading to Singapore. Our meeting is going to be hosted by INSEAD in Singapore in August. We have teams in Melbourne, Australia, Santiago, Chile. So we've basically hit every region of the world where we think we can have an impact. And what we're noticing is that we have communities of women who are coming together and supporting us. So definitely tune in to what we're doing on Facebook. Our radio shows going forward, we will be recording several sessions every week. So you'll be hearing more from Maddie and Michelle. And they will be available, downloadable on podcasts and MP3 files. So we encourage you to circulate these to your friends. So we're really getting the message out there, partnering with amazing organizations that already are in our space, collaborating with as many people who want to get behind us. Again, men and boys, you are most welcome. We want you with us. You're 40% already. Let's make it 50. Come on, let's go.
Yeah,
we're almost there. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're off to a great start. And we're only 4 months old. So we've got a lot to look forward to.
Agreed. It's so great that you've accomplished that in 4 months. I mean, who could imagine that? But obviously, the proof is right there. And social media is a big part of it. It's that revolution that kind of brings us all together. There are many times when people will say, you know, is social media a negative thing? But we also have to realize it can be a positive thing because it's that connectivity. And it's the sense that we are all over the world. We're in different countries, but in one place we can come together and celebrate one topic, one cause. So this is just one of them.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to this amazing adventure with all of you sitting in the room here with us today and all of you who are listening to us from far, far away. This is going to be an amazing journey.
Agreed. So again, we just wanted to thank all of our guests for joining us here today, Anu, Melina, Bianca, as well as Mara and Penny.
Yes.
It's been wonderful. So with that being said, I'm your host, Maddie Rose.
And I'm your other host, Michelle Jaffe.
And we're going to be wrapping it up. So remember, tune in next time for another episode of Women Investing in Women and Girls.
Thank you for joining us today. Your hosts will be back next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, for another edition of Women Investing in Women and Girls on the Voice America Kids channel. We'll talk then.